the things that you worry about the other days of the week. Not only that, but the Shabbat is a time in which we realize that it is too easy in life to hold on to grievances, to angers, to grudges, and we're supposed to turn our hearts from that to thankfulness, to goodness, to forgiveness and kindness. Tov lehodot l'Adonai, it is good to thank God on Shabbat, because Shabbat is the time in which we are supposed to be our best selves. And so, we offer God thanksgiving, not just for all the bounties of the world, but because God has implanted within us the capacity to be better. Page 155, the Chatzi Kaddish.
Ve'imaru amen. Yehi shmei rabba mevarach le'alam mul almei amaya.
Yitbarach.
Yitbarach ve'yishtabach v'yitpav yitroman v'yitnase. V'yitadar v'yitala v'yitala Shemei dekudesho b'richu Le'en lo min kol birchata v'shirata Tushvichata v'nechemata v'nechemata Damiron
Join Cantor Goal on page 156B, page 156B for the Musaf Amida.
Baruch Ata Adonai,
Baruch Shalom,
Eloheinu Velohei Avoteinu, Elohei Avraham, Elohei Yitzhak, Elohei Yaakov, Elohei Sarah, Elohei Rivka, Elohei Rachel, Elohei Leah, Ha'el Hagadol, Hagibor, V'Hanora, Elayon, Gomel Chasadim Tovim, V'Kone Hakov, V'Zoche Baruch Ata Adonai,
Baruch Shalom,
Magen Avraham, Mufaked Sarah, Ata Givor Le'olam Adonai, Mechaye Metim Ata Rav Lehoshia, Mechakel Chayim Bechesed, Mechaye Metim Lerachamim Rabim, Somech Nofalim Berofei Chulim Uma. Adir Asurim Umekayem Emunat Urmishene Afan Michamucha Bagivurot Michamucha Bagivurot Umidu Melach Melech Benit Umekaye Natal hachayot metim Baruch atah Adonai Mechaye hametim me Baruch Kevod Adonai Mimekomu. Mimekomu Huyifen Huyifen Merachamim. Shema Marim, Shema Yisrael, Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad, Hu Eloheinu, Hu Avinu. Katuv lemor yimloch Adonai leolam Elohai Tzion ledor vador halleluya. Netzachim kedushadcha nakedish ledov adon ledov adon ledov adon agitod lecha ulenetzach netzachim ulenetzach netzachim kedu shod khonakish ve shiv khokho elohenu mi pinu lo yamush lo yolam vat ki amalachot amalachotu ve shata ledovado nagi kol lecha ulenetzach netzachim ulenetzach netzachim kedushatcha nakish baruch atah Adonai.
For those of you who've completed your Amidah, please be seated. And we'd like to welcome
we continue our service this morning on page 157, the last paragraph we just sang, L'dor V'dor. And I would like this morning to teach you a new melody, to introduce you to a new version of L'dor V'dor, a new setting that was written by Craig Taubman. It's a very beautiful setting, and I want to share it with you, with the hope that you will permit me in the future to possibly do it instead of the L'dor V'dor that we currently do. So before you make a decision about that, I ask you to please listen to this melody, and I want you also, I want to teach it to you. I want you to join in with me. So I'm going to sing it line by line. I'm going to ask you to join in repetition with me.
L'dor v'dor nagid god lecha, L'dor v'dor nagid god lecha.
That's the first line. So let's everyone sing that together.
L'dor v'dor nagid god lecha, L'dor v'dor nagid god lecha.
One more time.
L'dor v'dor nagid god lecha, L'dor v'dor nagid god lecha.
Second line.
U'lenetzach netzachim kedushatcha.
Everyone. One.
U'lenetzach netzachim kedushatcha nakdish.
From the beginning, everyone.
L'dor v'dor nagid god lecha, L'dor v'dor nagid god lecha. Netzachim kedushatcha nakdish. v'shivcha Eloheinu mipinu lo yamush le'olam va'ed.
Try that, everyone.
V'shivcha Eloheinu mipinu lo yamush le'olam va'ed.
That line repeats.
V'shivcha Eloheinu.
A little modification.
Mipinu lo yamush le'olam va'ed.
Let's do that much together. And
v'shivcha Eloheinu mipinu lo yamush le'olam va'ed. V'shivcha Eloheinu mipinu lo yamush le'olam va'ed.
Back to the beginning.
L'dor v'ador nagigod lecha. L'dor v'ador nagigod lecha. U'lenetzach netzachim kedushatcha.
Let's do that line together. Ki El Melech.
Ki El Melech Gadol V'Kadoshata L'dor v'ador Nagigod Lecha.
So let's all do it from the beginning, one time through, L'dor v'ador. L'dor v'ador. Is everyone following? Everybody singing? Good. Feels good. Feels good when you sing. Here we go.
L'dor v'ador nagigod lecha. Netzach, netzachim, kedushatcha nagish. L'dor v'ador nagigod lecha. L'dor v'ador nagigod lecha. L'netzach, netzach. V'shivcha Eloheinu mipinu lo yamush le'olam va'ed. V'shivcha Eloheinu mipinu lo yamush le'olam va'ed. L'dor v'ador Nagidot Lecho. Lidovado Nagidot Lecho. Ule Netzach, Netzachim, Kedushotcha.
Page 181.
Yid gadav yid kadash shemer abo. Yal badi velaki lo teviyam lechmar achod bechay chonu vimei chonu bechay lochol beit Yisrael bagalav isman kari veimeru. Amen. Yehesh shemer abam mevarach leolam ulal me'amaya. Shalom yaramo, v'hu yaseh shalom aleinu ve'ale kol Yisrael ve'im daru.
Several months ago, the Los Angeles Jewish Journal contacted a number of rabbis and told us that they were going to start a series in the paper and they wanted us to participate. And the series was going to be, "What book do you think every Jew should read?" And the only restriction was you couldn't pick a book that a rabbi had already picked and written about. And when they called me and they said, "Okay, what's your book?" I had no hesitation whatsoever. Because I wanted to pick a book that was not a traditional sacred text, because that I assumed people would have for years and years been encouraged to read, that was short and easy to read, because you're not allowed to recommend long books. You can't tell somebody, "Oh, you've got to read War and Peace." And that among the millions of books in the world, the hundreds of thousands that are published every single year, and hundreds of thousands are published every year, there are very few books that actually really can change your life, that are not borrowed wisdom taken from other books, but that are sources of wisdom themselves. And so I picked a short book that I had read as a child and have reread since, that every Jew should read, that has sold millions of copies, and that is called Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. I just wrote the article for the journal last week, and so the book is fresh in my mind. And the purpose of this morning's sermon is to try to convince you to read or to reread this very short book. Viktor Frankl was already a noted psychiatrist in Germany when he was deported to Auschwitz. And there, unlike most of the inmates, he not only lived at the level of horrendous experience and terrible tragedy, but also he tried to watch and learn what he could derive as a psychiatrist, as a healer of human souls, from his experience in the concentration camps. And the very beginning of the book is about his experience in the camps, and then the rest of the book is what you can learn from the extremes of experience that Frankl endured about the life that we all lead. He developed a therapy called logotherapy, which he was actually already in the course of developing when he came into the camps. And in fact, when he first came to Auschwitz, he carried with him a scientific manuscript that he treasured and planned, of course, to hide and to keep. And the first lesson that he learned was that nothing was sacred. You could keep nothing, no possessions, no external relationships, no trust. You couldn't even rely on the world working the way you know the world is supposed to work. In Primo Levi's powerful memoir, Survival in Auschwitz, he recalls a guard saying, "Here there is no why. Suffering is random. You never know." You can have a guard who is somewhat kind or a guard who is a sadist. And it can change from day to day. The worst moment, says Frankl, was waking up in the morning. Because all of a sudden, the world was real. He talks about the choice that people had. Since they only had a crust of bread, there were those who ate the bread right away because they thought satisfying your hunger was the most important, and others who parceled it out crumb by crumb so that they would have something to look forward to. And he tries to decide how it is that some survive. Now, obviously, there's an element of randomness. If you're shot, you're shot. But there was a huge number of people whose survival was dependent, says Frankl, on the attitude they took toward their suffering. In fact, he said, "Everything can be taken from a man but one thing, the last of human freedoms. To choose one's attitude in any given set of circumstances, to choose one's way." That was his first lesson in the camp. That in fact, you cannot control your circumstances, but you have control over your attitude. You can give up in hopeless despair, or you can cherish the possibility of goodness and of meaning. My mind still clung to the image of my wife. A thought crossed my mind. I didn't even know if she were still alive. I knew only one thing, which I have learned well by now. Love goes very far beyond the physical person of the beloved. It finds its deepest meaning in his spiritual being, his inner self, whether or not he is actually present, whether or not he is still alive at all, ceases somehow to be of importance. Frankl wrote those words after he discovered that, in fact, his wife was killed in the camps. But inside of himself, he had an image of her that he cherished and that kept him going. It was, in fact, his realization that life is about creating meaning, and that those who felt meaning in their experience, however they found that meaning, those who felt meaning in their experience did not surrender to despair. Those were the ones who had a chance to survive. And that was the realization that allowed him to survive. He could tell when somebody was losing hope. They gradually stopped making an effort. They would slow down, their eyes would glaze over, and soon everyone knew they would die. Not only creativeness and enjoyment are meaningful, writes Frankl. If there is meaning in life at all, there must be meaning in suffering. Suffering is an ineradicable, that means an unerasable part of life, even as fate and death. Without suffering and death, human life cannot be complete. So the question is not, will you suffer? The question is, how will you suffer? The prisoner, he writes, who had lost faith in the future, in his future, was doomed. And he points out that it's not the future in general, because there is no such thing as the meaning of life. Frankl writes that asking someone the meaning of life is like asking a chess master what's the best move. There is no generic best move. There's a best move in this position and a best move in that position. There is no meaning of life. There's the meaning of your life and the meaning of your life and the meaning of your life. The question isn't to climb to the mountaintop and ask what's the meaning of life. The question is to be in the marketplace and say, what is the meaning of my life? What allows me to keep going? What is it that I believe? What is it that I love? What is it that gives purpose and direction to my days? We had to learn ourselves, and furthermore had to teach those who despaired that it didn't really matter what we expected from life. It mattered what life expected from us. What is it that we can do in service to the goals of our soul? Frankl talks about the fact that you can't just be happy any more than you can just laugh. You can laugh in response to a joke. You can be happy in response to attitude, to purpose, and to action. That's why he doesn't have, I think, that much patience for those who believe that the goal of life is to be peaceful in mind, to be settled, to be calm. Because this is what he writes. Thus it can be seen that mental health is based on a certain degree of tension. Tension between what one has already achieved and what one still ought to accomplish. The gap between what one is and what one should become. And you can understand why. The point was that in the camp there had to be something to grow towards. You had to believe that what was not all. And as you read through his book, you see again and again that his belief, not that suffering is meaningful, but that suffering can be made meaningful, makes all the difference. It's not that he would say that you suffered for a certain purpose. It's that he would say, since life is unavoidably in part about suffering, the question is, what do you do with the suffering that has been given you? There are three ways, says Frankl, to create meaning in your life. One has to do with creativity and work and accomplishment. One has to do with relationship. And one has to do with how you handle unavoidable suffering. That's what he took. out of the camp. Live as if you were living for the second time and had acted as wrongly the first time as you are about to act now. I'm going to read that again because it's in italics. Live as if you were living for the second time and has acted as wrongly the first time as you are about to act now. In other words, give yourself the experience in advance. What if you were coming back and you saw the way you live your daily life and the way you're about to live your daily life? How would you live? Because the day will come when you will look back on your life. And you'll see if you lived it meaningfully or not. And whether you made a difference or you didn't. Frankl was the one who proposed, I noticed nobody took him up on this proposal, that just as there is a Statue of Liberty in the East Coast, and these are some of the closing words of the book, there should be on the West Coast a Statue of Responsibility. Because to create meaning out of your life means to take responsibility for your actions and not to blame your circumstances. One of the things that he says in this book is in his work with survivors, it took him a long time to convince some of them that no matter what you suffer, it is never an excuse for inflicting suffering on others. It doesn't give you a license to be cruel because you have been treated cruelly. Because on the West Coast, remember, is that Statue of Responsibility. There are, says Frankl, in this book, only two races of people, the decent and the indecent. And I think that we might amend that to say that that line between decent and indecent runs through every human heart. There are two ways to be decent and indecent. And at every moment, in every situation, we are challenged by each alternative. And the choice, at least in part, has to do with the end toward which you wish to reach. The meaning that propels you. What it is that you decide your life is about. Now, Frankl did not write this as an explicitly religious book. He doesn't say in here, your meaning has to be about God. Although, in several places, he writes as somebody who is clearly animated by faith. Rather, he writes about this as somebody who knows that life can be meaningful if people take the time to find their meaning. And if their meaning is not just about themselves. It has to be about something bigger than me. Otherwise, it's not meaning, it's just narcissism. I could go on. There is an awful lot in this very short book. But I will give you an example by reading to you what he says to someone who comes to him because they have lost the person whom they loved. Once an elderly general practitioner consulted me because of his severe depression. He could not overcome the loss of his wife who had died 2 years before and whom he had loved above all else. How could I help him? What should I tell him? I refrained from telling him anything, but confronted him with the question, what would have happened, doctor, if you had died first and your wife would have had to survive you? Oh, he said, for her this would have been terrible. How she would have suffered. Whereupon I replied, you see, doctor, such suffering has been spared her, and it was you who spared her this suffering, to be sure at the price that now you have to survive and mourn her. There is meaning to his pain. It doesn't take the pain away, but there is meaning to it. Any book that promises to take the pain away is foolish and false. Any book that is written by somebody who has lived in the center of human pain and teaches us how to make that pain mean something is invaluable. Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl. In order for a book to really be a source of wisdom, it takes a rare combination of intelligence, passion, insight, and experience. Frankl speaks from the heart of darkness. But for all of us willing to listen, he brings us light. Shabbat Shalom. I'd like to invite everybody to please come in. As we ask you, please, to turn to page 182. Page 182. For Ein Kelohenu. Ein Kelohenu.